The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
January is usually the time when many of us decide to embrace a healthier lifestyle, whether it's cutting out the booze, joining the gym, or even going for a sauna. Saunas have become increasingly popular over the past while, including the installation of mobile saunas at seaside locations. But do they actually boost your health? Well, to tell us more, Dr. Heather Massey is Associate Professor of Extreme Environments and Physiology at the University of Portsmouth. Heather, good morning.
Good morning.
Now, the question we're all asking, is a sauna good for me or is it not?
That's a great question. And lots of people swear by the use of sauna. And there's some research evidence to suggest that using saunas may help people to live longer. But we need to be really aware that this research has only looked at their sauna use and not other lifestyle factors that might influence their sort of longevity as well. So we're still trying to research whether saunas are good for us at this stage.
Now, will you talk to me about the definition of a sauna? You see, if you're in Finland, there is no sauna that is complete without the cold dip afterwards. So is that what a complete sauna is, or is it just the warming up of the body?
Well, here in the UK and in Ireland as well, we would probably call it a sauna going into the warm room. But you're right. In Finland, it would be the combination of going into the hot room, the warm room, and also the cold dip too.
You see, you know what, with your body heating up and so on, and then suddenly you drop the temperature dramatically. If your ticker wasn't in good shape, you'd be worried that it might misbehave in that circumstance.
Absolutely. And you'd be right to do so because both going into extreme heat and extreme cold can cause some problems, especially in those individuals that may have underlying conditions. So any heart conditions, for example. So it's always good to get yourself medically checked, to check your fit and healthy before you undertake these activities if you've not done them before.
Now, there are those who go into the sauna and they pour water on the rocks to get the really hot steam generated. And they come out of it and it's like someone who's braved a very hot vindaloo curry. They say, wasn't I great? I put up with all of that heat. And that might be some of it, you know, it's kind of self-worship, how good I am to be able to do this.
Yeah, there can be a little bit of bravado around the use of sauna and also the use of cold water dips as well, trying to go in for colder or longer. We would really caution against that. You know, make sure you acclimatise slowly to these extremes of temperature and avoid going into the sauna for extended periods of time over 10 minutes or so. And the same for the cold as well. If you're going to get into the cold water, gradually get in. You really need to familiarise yourself with the symptoms associated with heat illness and also the cold shock response that you get on initial immersion in cold water.
Now, that cold shock response, you know, they call those small pools outside saunas, they call them plunge pools for a reason, because you plunge in, you don't put a toe in and then an ankle, then a knee and then a thigh, you just jump in.
Again, we would really, really caution against doing that. And the RNLI have some great advice on their research page, which focuses on the use of sauna and also subsequent cold water immersion. And their advice also suggests that we should enter water slowly and in a controlled fashion. So trying not to plunge in would be their recommendation too.
The question of whether what is happening to you, that feel-good factor, which is very subjective, that's really what it's all about. I feel great, but the science question is it doing me any good?
And that's a great question. Science hasn't got the answers yet, but it is being worked on. So there are a number of small-scale projects that have looked at the use of sauna. And in those projects, they've come up with some positive findings about people's feelings of mental well-being. But these are only really small-scale studies and not on a very broad demographic. So there's still work to be done on that.
So does the duration of the sauna have an impact then, do you think? I mean, a 5-minute sauna versus a 20-minute sauna?
Again, we don't have enough information to be able to prescribe a duration of sauna. But if you're new to sauna, it's definitely worth starting off slowly and going in for short periods of time, 5-10 minutes max. And only once you've done it frequently or for a longer period of time, extending your stay a little bit.
And if you tend to do that, and maybe you have that cold water or seawater swim every single day of the year, does that make you more prepared for that cold snap when the temperature of the seawater might drop down by several degrees overnight? But because you've been swimming every day, your body says, okay, I'm used to this.
So when you repeatedly immerse yourselves in cold water, we know that there's a reduction in your cold shock response. So if you regularly do it on a daily basis, those individuals that do that will have a much smaller cold shock response than an individual that is new to the activity. So yeah, for sure, those individuals that are regular dippers will experience less of a cold shock response.
So the hardy boys and girls are less likely to have a health issue from a sudden immersion in either hot or cold.
That's not necessarily the case, because those individuals that are regularly exposed to the cold water may want to do things like extend their stay in the cold water. And we know this time of year, the water is very cold. And there are several other problems associated with going into cold water that may become problematic. So things like hypothermia or swimming-induced pulmonary edema, or even something called non-freezing cold injuries. So these are all things that start to become apparent if we stay in water a little bit longer.
So just explain that to me a little bit, how you could injure yourself by a protracted stay in cold water.
Yeah, so there's several things you can do. So the non-freezing cold injury, for instance, is where you are exposed to air temperatures or water temperatures that aren't freezing, and the tissues of the skin will start to become damaged as a consequence. So that will be the blood vessels and also the nerves of the skin. The nerves in your body will start to become damaged. And this particularly affects the your digits and so fingers and toes, and they can feel very painful or also numb as well because of that cold exposure.
Now, the question of the healing effect of extremes, I mean, the body regularly maintains itself at what, 37, 38 degrees centigrade, and it does that pretty efficiently. And in the hot weather, you perspire so that the perspiration evaporates off, and in so doing, it actually cools the skin. That's how the body works. So the body's pretty good at maintaining that regular temperature. But there are those who believe in the healing effect of the extremes, you know, applying a warm poultice to something, or perhaps putting an ankle that's been injured in a football match into an ice bath. So is there any evidence at all for the healing effect of extreme heat or cold?
Yes, there is some limited evidence, and definitely we're still sort of told to use the cold compress and the heat intermittently between the two to try to reduce swelling, for instance. So it's still a thing. It's one of those things that will be it's primarily helpful for those initial exposure to the injury rather than a prolonged exposure of one or the other. Mm. So it's one of the things you want to do as a contrast.
Because you see, footballers, and particularly rugby players, they will often, when they have to remove themselves from play because they're injured, but they want to watch their colleagues finish out the match, and you'll see them sitting on the sideline, and they'll have maybe a leg completely immersed in an ice pack.
Absolutely, yeah. So it's still used, and the physiotherapists that are supporting the athletes will be monitoring what they're doing. So yeah, definitely, it's still something that's done and still very useful at that initial acute injury stage.
So we go back to where we started. Is the sauna good for me or bad for me?
My belief is that individuals that want to go and use sauna, get themselves checked out to check that they're fit and healthy enough to take part. keep themselves hydrated when you're in the sauna, and move around gently. Don't make any sort of rapid movements, and you'll be perfectly okay and enjoy your experience. So those individuals that want to take part and feel fit and able to, if you follow that advice and the advice of the RNLI around sauna use and cold water immersion, you'll be okay.
And the final question, is this really all about collegiality? Whether it's, you know, doing a tough park run, a tough 10K, a sea swim every day, or a sauna with your pals, it's all about, I suppose, fellow feeling, that you're with a gang of people all doing the same thing, and it's that's where the enjoyment lies.
There's a real sense of community around cold water dipping, cold water swimming, and also the use of combination with sauna as well. So I think that is definitely part of the appeal.
Dr. Heather Massey, Associate Professor of Extreme Environments and Physiology at the University of Portsmouth, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.